Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good afternoon and welcome to Monday's Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany.
And I'm the co-host Crispin Mwakide with what's trending on social media and what you have been saying about stories posted on our DW Africa Facebook page.
Also in the programme, the Catholic Church in Rwanda apologises for its participation in the 1994 genocide.
It's a good move, it's a positive move, but I always ask myself, why to wait 22 years? This come after a long period for them denying their role in the genocide against the Tutsi.
And Angela Merkel says she'll be standing for a fourth term as Germany's Chancellor. She also tells her supporters not to expect too much from her.
Aber ich habe auch ganz klar gesagt, all das, was damit...
Everything that has been said about how everything now depends on me, especially after the elections in the US, does me great honor. But at the same time, I find it grotesque and absurd.
Plus, reactions to a video of a Nigerian footballer balancing a football while cycling for more than 100 kilometers.
But first, we catch up with what's been happening around the globe.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. A massive suicide blast at a Shiite mosque in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, has killed at least 27 people and wounded 35. A senior police officer said the attacker detonated the bomb among worshippers inside the mosque. The so-called Islamic State militant group has reportedly claimed the bombing. Local elections in Mali have been marred by boycotts and violence, as six civilians and police were killed early Monday in twin attacks in the north of the country. Local security blamed the attacks on alleged jihadists, who they say have been trying to sabotage the country's first election since 2013. Despite the presence of international peacekeepers, the election turnout was low, as fears of continuing violence persist. Media and officials have weighed in on German Chancellor Angela Merkel's decision to run for a fourth term in office. Germany's SPD parliamentary chairman Thomas Oppermann gave his thoughts on Merkel's decision.
We were expecting it, of course. I'm looking forward to an exciting contest. The election next year is completely open and Mrs. Merkel is no longer unbeatable. The climate in Germany has become harsher, but we cannot allow right-wing populists to set the tone. We will not adopt their offensive language and lack of respect in the election campaign, but we'll be speaking clearly, that is certain.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Outgoing U.S. President Barack Obama has defended free trade at the conclusion of the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit in Lima, Peru. In his final foreign press conference, Obama urged world leaders to trade right.
Our global integrated economy has helped to improve the lives of billions of people around the world. That's why I firmly believe that one of our greatest challenges in the years ahead will be to make sure that the benefits of the global economy are shared by more people, and that the negative impacts, such as economic inequalities, are addressed by all nations. When it comes to trade, I believe that the answer is not to pull back, but rather the answer is to do trade right, making sure that it has strong labor standards, strong environmental standards.
Nigeria's economy has taken a hit in the third quarter as a devaluing national currency, increased attacks on oil pipelines from the Niger Delta Avengers, and a slip in manufacturing has contributed to the decline. Nigerian economists have questioned whether President Muhammadu Buhari can pull the country out of recession, as peace talks between the government and oil rebels appeared to have failed earlier this month. And now in sports, Ivory Coast captain Chervino is expected to miss up to 6 months after successful surgery on a ruptured ligament. That timeline would leave the captain out of the African Nation Cup finals when Ivory Coast would defend their title in Gabon in January. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
The Catholic Church in Rwanda has apologised for its role in the 1994 genocide, saying it regretted the actions of those who had participated in the massacres. Some accounts by survivors say many of the 800,000 ethnic Tutsis and moderate Hutus who died in the mass slaughter did so at the hands of priests, clergymen and nuns. The statement by the Rwandan Conference of Bishops is being seen as a positive development in efforts towards reconciliation. Silvanus Karamera reports.
The statement released on Monday and signed by 9 bishops constitutes regret, confession and acknowledgement of the crimes committed by its members during the genocide in 1994. The Council of Bishops in the statement asked for forgiveness for the actions of its leaders that participated in the mass killings. Bishop Philip Lukamba is the spokesperson of the Council and Bishop of Tel Diocese in Western Rwanda.
Although the Church did not send anyone to do harm, we as Catholic bishops apologize because of the priests, clergy, and Christians who played a role in the genocide. They committed a grave sin against humanity. We ask God to change their hearts, help them repent, reconcile, and do right by those they betrayed.
President of the Umbrella of Genocide Survivors Associations, Professor Jean-Pierre Dusingize Mungu, he said the apology will lead to justice, fight genocide ideology, and help in national building.
Our organization has received this news with overwhelming joy. It's been long overdue. This apology means a lot for us, although it took so long. We think if they did this early enough, it would have solved a lot of problems. But again, we appreciate it since it leads us to yet another step towards full reconciliation of Rwandans.
However, some Catholic Church followers received the move with mixed reactions. Grace Simbi is a genocide survivor and followed the statement closely.
It's a good move, it's a positive move, but I always ask myself, why to wait 22 years? This come after a long period, you know, after a long period for them denying their role in the genocide against the Tutsi. The other thing is that the communique that was supposed to be read in all the Catholic churches in Rwanda was not communicated in all those churches, like Saint Michel. Like, you know, there are some churches where this communique was not read.
Bishop John Dolimana, once a bishop in the church and an author of a number of books on genocide, said the church should go an extra mile in cleaning its image.
They should seek apology for what they've been doing all these years. They have been huddled for those trying to step forward to say the truth on genocide. They dare say that they will never seek mercy until all clerics suspected of genocide are taken to court. Yet they said this with full understanding the respective clerics are still looming around the world.
However, there are reports that the majority of churches in the capital Kigali refused to read out this statement as initially planned. The Catholic Pontiff, Pope Francis, is supposedly behind this move for the Church to repair its image in the country.
And that was Silvanus Karamera reporting from Kigali, Rwanda.
And commenting on that story on Facebook, Mbaga Karim said, "It is a good step that the Catholic Church in Rwanda has apologized to the victims of the 1994 Rwandan genocide. The move will help bring healing and also strengthen the bond between citizens. This in turn will help build a new Rwanda where there is no ethnic conflict." But Elias Shiguta wants more than just remorse from the Catholic bishops. He says, despite seeking forgiveness, there is need to take strong legal action against those who were involved in the atrocities committed in Rwanda.
This is Africa Link. Germany's leader, 62-year-old Angela Merkel, has announced that she will be standing for a fourth term at elections expected next year. Her handling of Europe's migrants crisis is controversial, drawing both criticism and praise. Merkel has already been in power for 11 years, and some are now wondering, and this is unusual for Germany, if there shouldn't be a limit on the number of terms a chancellor can serve. Abubakar Jalou has the story.
Announcing on Sunday she will seek a fourth term in office, Angela Merkel said her decision was not a trivial one, but she had the motivation to serve Germany using her talent and experience. But the German leader cautioned her supporters not to expect too much of her.
Aber ich habe auch ganz klar gesagt, all das, was damit...
Everything that has been said about how everything now depends on me, especially after the elections in the US, does me great honor. But at the same time, I find it grotesque and absurd. Nobody on their own, not even the most experienced leader, can turn things around in Germany, the whole of Europe and the rest of the world, and certainly not the Chancellor of Germany.
Merkel faces perhaps the biggest test of her career, with Germany increasingly becoming polarized. The far-right alternative for Germany, AfD, is likely to enter the federal parliament in Berlin for the first time next year. Already chancellor for 11 years, Germany's Iron Lady, as they say, faces formidable tasks. She is expected to strengthen and lead the alliance of Western countries, which has been shaken by Donald Trump's election victory in the United States. She is also expected to hold the European Union together, which is at risk of breaking apart after the UK's Brexit vote to leave the EU. Under the German constitution, there is no constitutional limit as to how many times a chancellor can serve in office. In theory, Angela Merkel could rule for as long as she lives, provided the people still vote for her. Her mentor Helmut Kohl served as leader of the country for 16 years. But is it democratic to have a government leader who doesn't want to relinquish power? Frank Decker is a political scientist based in Bonn.
At first glance, this may appear to be an obvious question. But Helmut Kohl had a good answer for this. He was once asked about having been in office almost as long as Bismarck, the former chancellor of the German Reich. He replied, "Unlike Bismarck, I've always been re-elected."
Named Time magazine's Person of the Year in 2015, Merkel oversaw Europe's biggest influx of refugees to the continent since World War II, having only just helped patch the Eurozone crisis. Merkel's approval rating is still very high, standing at 60% according to a recent survey by Forsa polling agency. But whether that's enough to get her re-elected remains much to be seen. Her party, the Christian Democratic Union, have yet to re-elect her party chairwoman, almost a prerequisite for her bid for a fourth term.
Abubakar Jallo reporting on the big news story here in Germany at the moment.
And Mark, it is interesting how divided Africans on social media are about the fact that Chancellor Merkel is running for a fourth term.
I guess the comments have been rather negative since the continent is still grappling with several leaders who've been in power for decades.
On the contrary, many of our Facebook users had no issue with Merkel's fourth term bid. We posted an article with the title Angela Forever, Is That Still Democracy? Ni Ebenezer Lizor doesn't think it's a bad idea. He commented, Angela Forever is no harm. After all, she isn't as evil as the others.
Better the devil you know than the devil you don't. Well, let's see how German voters decide next year.
And speaking of decisions, DW News put out an online survey on Twitter with the question, do you support Angela Merkel's decision to run again for chancellor? More than 50% of those who took part say they do support her. Around 30% say they don't agree with her decision, whereas 17% say it didn't really matter to them whether she runs again or not. Mark, you're aware that the issue of presidential term limits is a very controversial and hot topic in Africa. We saw how it led to the crisis in Burundi, which has yet to be resolved. Agri Kakubo commented on DW Africa Facebook page saying, if it was in Africa, she could have been accused of being a dictator. But James Muhando quickly countered this argument, saying, I don't think that if Merkel is re-elected, that would amount to dictatorship. After all, democracy is just the will of the majority prevailing while the minority have a say. But James also adds, what I find interesting, however, is that Germany does not have a term limit.
Is anybody talking about who could perhaps succeed or pose a successful challenge to Merkel?
Well, I think the Eurosceptic party, AfD's chairperson, Frauke Petri, is one of those who would be most likely challenging Angela Merkel. And we don't know whether also the leader of the SPD, Sigmar Gabriel, might also be one of those who might challenge her.
Crispin Machideo, by the way, if you're wondering, the date for the next German general election, when Merkel will be standing again, hasn't been decided yet, but it is expected to be between late August and late October 2017. This is Africa Link. Coming up here on Africa Link, the AIDS campaigner who hopes that once an HIV vaccine has been discovered, the stigma attached to the disease will disappear.
My hope is that when the vaccine really exists, when it's effective and really does work, that this fear will no longer be there.
More on that story later. A call by a radical South African opposition leader for the seizure of white-owned land appears to be resonating with his followers. Last week, Julius Malema of the Economic Freedom Fighters told his supporters they should occupy any beautiful piece of land that caught their eyes. Malema's words also prompted protests from people who have lived on plots of land for decades, but whose future there is in doubt because of legal uncertainty over land ownership. Sobri Govender reports.
A number of communities around South Africa appear to have been encouraged by statements by opposition leader Julius Malema and his fellow leaders to invade and reclaim land lying vacant. They seem to have been spurred on, especially by a statement like this that Malema made in the city of Bloemfontein last week when calling on people to take occupation of vacant land.
Whatever it takes to collapse white supremacy and replace it with an equal society, all of us will enjoy the fruits of our freedom.
I visited one of the communities in an area known as Upper Inanda, north of the city of Durban in the KwaZulu-Natal province. Here, about 40 families who have been living on the farms for decades staged protests immediately after Malema's statements to claim ownership of the land. Some of them told me that the first democratic president of the country, Nelson Mandela, should have reclaimed all the land when he came to power in the early 1990s. Lisa Mbele, a young girl, talking on behalf of her family, told me they live in a state of uncertainty without being given ownership of the land.
My father been staying here for so long. You must be treated equally. Now that I'm standing here, I must have the paper that's allowing me to do everything that I want to do in the property that I'm in. Because you can't do anything if you can't have that paper.
Her neighbor, 45-year-old Tulisa Kuzwayo, is a representative and spokesperson for the community.
So now, who's still gaining? We need land. If you don't have a place to stay, if you don't have a house to live, how can you live life? We live in democracy. I don't understand that because at this moment of time, I don't have a paper for the place I stay in.
A local farmer whose family has been farming sugarcane, bananas and vegetables since the early 1900s is Brett Williams. He told me they understood the calls for land redistribution. But he said insightful statements by Malema and his fellow leaders, violent acts and intimidation should not become the order of the day.
I went down to assist my neighbors. Again, it was aggression, burning of tires, blocking of roads. I don't feel that there's a need for this. Aggression is not anything anybody wants. We just hope that we can resolve this in a peaceful manner and go down the correct channels.
Although the South African government has strongly condemned the incendiary statements by Malema and his fellow leaders, there are others, such as the former Deputy Judge President of the Constitutional Court, Dikang Mosineki, who have called for urgent resolution of the land question. They have said that any further delay in distributing land to the majority of the people will only lead to greater unrest and disorder.
Sobri Govender reporting.
Health check.
Thanks to the development of antiretroviral drugs, the lives of people with HIV/AIDS can be prolonged and improved in quality, even though there's no cure for the disease. Some 36 million people worldwide are infected with HIV, and the majority of them live in sub-Saharan Africa. Now, many who have been following humanity's battle with HIV believe that only a vaccine can stamp it out. Rachel Stewart has been to a new research institute here in Germany.
Me, for myself, I made the decision that I don't let HIV overshadow our future. And I hope that you all will join me in this fight. Thank you very much.
As director of the new HIV Research Institute at Essen University Hospital, Dr. Hendrik Streeck is passionate about finding a vaccine for HIV. While the infection rate for the virus in Germany is relatively low, Dr. Streeck believes Germany has a responsibility to help other countries too.
This is a global disease which is strongly linked to poverty. The patients who can't afford treatment and who live in poverty are the most likely to contract HIV.
Until last year, Streeck was in the United States, working with the US military HIV research program. The MHRP is now a key partner of his new institute in Essen. In 2009, the Thai branch of this program trialed a vaccine that proved to be 30% effective. That might not sound like much, but Streeck explains just how significant this was for the field of HIV research.
This really is a glimmer of hope that it can be achieved in the long run. It also rejuvenated and reunited the field and showed us that we really need to keep fighting together and put more energy into this so that we can translate that glimmer of hope into a success.
The idea is that the new institute will become a platform for international collaboration in HIV research. The MHRP's Dr. Jintanat Anonwaranich agrees that this is the most productive approach.
We work in Thailand, in Africa, and now in Germany, and so we cover working in areas that have different HIV subtypes that behave differently. So we have the opportunity to make sure that whatever we develop as HIV vaccine or prevention strategies or treatment strategies, that these things would work globally.
At the age of 22, Mike Schutz, who is now the director of AIDS-Hilfe Essen, was diagnosed with HIV. Since then, he has seen many developments in HIV research.
I've lived with this for 23 years, and I know that things can move very quickly, or they can take decades. But I think it's important that this work is done.
According to Schutz, the stigma of being HIV positive is still a big problem in Germany. He explains that many people don't tell their employers or their colleagues about their illness because they are afraid of the reaction they will get.
My hope is that when the vaccine really exists, when it's effective and really does work, that this fear will no longer be there.
Developing a vaccine for HIV is extremely difficult because of the complexity and diversity of the virus. It is able to integrate with host cells and mutate, allowing it to escape any effort by the immune system to destroy it. As Streeck explains, another problem is the structure of the HIV itself.
We want to understand the outer structure of HIV, which we call the envelope. These are little blobs that sit on the virus. They have a very complicated structure whereby three components basically integrate to form a ball. So far, it has been really difficult to replicate this in a test tube.
Scientists have been trying to crack the HIV code for years, and Streeck admits that it is basically impossible to estimate when a breakthrough might come. Nevertheless, he remains hopeful.
We are living in exciting times because there are various working models that have proven effective in animal trials. To now test these on people, that's really exciting.
For DW, this is Rachel Stewart in Essen, Germany.
Who would have believed it? For the first time in 14 months, Bayern Munich are now no longer top of the Bundesliga. They've been usurped by RB Leipzig. I'm joined in the studio now by Chuck Penfold. Chuck, Bayern are now no longer invincible. Why not?
Well, that's what people all over Germany are asking themselves this morning. I don't know if you can really pinpoint any one thing. Of course, they had a coaching change in the summer. The more, at least outwardly, laid-back Carlo Ancelotti replaced the very intense Pep Guardiola. But they did get off to a really good start this season, not dropping any points until match day six. However, since then, they've simply not been firing in all cylinders. Some say some players aren't as fit as they should be. Of course, they've had a few injuries as well. Sometimes they seem to be lacking precision in their passing or finishing. Thomas Müller seems to have completely forgotten how to score, it would seem, and Robert Lewandowski has been in better form in the past, so I think a few things have come together for them or against them so far this season.
Team captain Philipp Lahm was understandably not very pleased, but doesn't he have his mind on other things? Isn't he thinking about a career move?
Yeah, it does seem to be on his mind. Now, he certainly wasn't pleased, as you say. He answered a reporter's question quite sarcastically after the game. As for a career move, he has a contract until the end of next season, but there has been talk that he could end his playing career as soon as the end of this season to take up the vacant sporting director's post at Bayern. What seems certain is that he will have some role at the club when he stops playing, but it remains unclear when that might happen.
It's RB Leipzig's first Bundesliga season and they've set a new record. They've played 11 games and they haven't been beaten in any of them. What's their secret?
Well, that's another good question. They are extremely fit. They really go at their opponents offensively. And by the way, this is not the first time that a newly promoted team has gone on a really good run to start the season. It seems like sometimes a new team, even 11 match days into the season, can catch their opponents off guard a little bit. This often changes after the winter break, though, when there are no more surprises. What a remarkable story this is, though. RB Leipzig were only founded in May of 2009 and started in Germany's fifth tier, so they're only in their eighth year of play. At least for now, they're on top of the food chain in Germany.
And how secure are they in their position at the top of the food chain?
I think they're far from secure. We're only about a third of the way into the season, and Bayern and Dortmund and others will definitely be gunning for them. As I said, for these Bundesliga upstarts, things often tend to get more difficult in the second half of the season. But I think even if they were, say, to only qualify for the Europa League or the Champions League, that would be a remarkable achievement indeed.
Let's go from the top to the bottom of the table, where Hamburg find themselves. They're still without a win this season. Do you see this continuing?
Yeah, Hamburg just seemed to be in some kind of tailspin. They did earn a point against Hoffenheim, but that was just their third of the season. The chairman, Dietmar Beiersdorfer, has been trying to hire a sporting director, but that seems to have degenerated into some kind of farce. New coach Marco Skisdol is looking pretty lonely somehow. It's hard to see them not getting relegated for the first time at the end of this season. That whole club just seems to be in chaos. I think they need major changes pretty high up.
How about a quick word about Cologne, who have moved up into fourth place with a win in the Rhineland derby against Mönchengladbach? There were a couple of local heroes in this one, weren't there?
Yeah, this was a great story. The backup goalkeeper, Thomas Kessler, was forced into action because Timo Horn was injured, and that was his first action of the season. He had a fabulous game, making several key saves and helping Cologne to a 2-1 victory. The sports newspaper Kicker were so impressed by it, they made him the man of the day. The winner came in time added on. It was a beautiful shot from 35 yards out by Marcel Risse. The neat thing about Kessler and Risse is that they are both natives of Cologne.
Chuck Penfold from our sports desk. Crispin.
Yeah, Mark, back to the story on Merkel seeking a fourth term in office. Mateusz Sitoe jokingly asked, do European leaders now have a bit of African genes in them? And then Paul Kupete commented, if something like that happened in Africa, we would call it a monarchy. Please go and rest, Merkel. You have done a lot for Germany and Europe. Obama once said, no one is born to rule forever. But Cesaltino Cavellani said, the German Chancellor is a remarkable woman. I am delighted that she's running again, just like most Germans are. If Germany's constitution allows that, I have no problem at all. And from Angola, Ray Ekukui wrote, all over the world, we see politicians with such characteristics. They are hungry for power and fail to recognize when it is time to give up power. Someone should convince her to stop. This is the darkest side of democracy.
OK, that's democracy for you. Any more topics on social media?
Yeah, we posted a video with Nigerian footballer Harrison Chinedu, who is aiming to break the Guinness Book of World Records. The man cycled for more than 100 kilometres, but get this, Mark, he was balancing a football on his head all the time.
That's pretty impressive.
Indeed, and Rakia Doty was impressed by this feat, commenting, kudos to you, to Chinedu, that is. And Mojan Kingston Sacha commented, that is not easy to do on Nigerian roads.
Crispin, many thanks. And here are the stories we've been following for you on this edition of Africa Link. The Catholic Church in Rwanda has apologised for its role in the 1994 genocide. And Germany's leader, 62-year-old Angela Merkel, has announced she will be standing for a fourth term. From me, Mark Caldwell.
And from me, Crispin Mokideo.
Bye now.